Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome. Like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome. Like what if you have unexpected medical costs? United Healthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
To find out how ugly mankind can really be.
Myself and the clique are gonna dance all over your face.
Talk about your Psalms, talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says I just whipped your ass.
Welcome everyone to the Cultaholic Classic Review as the other Cultaholic lads are heading straight towards, I don't know, what is it, Survivor Series? Probably CM Punk coming back, you know. We're here via our hyper-pro-powered DeLorean, back in a time where things made more sense. When men were men, and dentists were wrestlers. Who'd be we? I'd be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, back in 1996, Tom Campbell. I am with my mulligan to my O'Hare, the Clive Fuck of Cultaholic, Dave Meltzer's best friend, the innovator, the regulator, the hard-fought victory congratulator. It's Jack Atkins, Jackie Orlando! Ah, hey!
But listen here, you little shit.
What's wrong with that intro? It was lovely.
It was lovely. The little jibe about hard-fought victories. As I said in the all-in tour vlog, which you can see on Cultaholic's YouTube page right now, we went into the press conference afterwards. It was hour 16 of me being at work, which is a foreign concept to me.
It was a long time, to be fair.
I was starting to see colours that I did not know existed. I had Jay Hunter and I had V1 behind me just cracking jokes with MJF's mum, and I was trying not to piss myself.
Wow.
But they don't tell you who's coming. And Aiden and I had a thing where I had me Slack open. I was like, right, Aiden, feed me questions. And he went, okay, got it. And Orange Cassidy comes out and I thought, he keeps it in kayfabe, I'll keep it in kayfabe with him. And also, I didn't know if I'd get a question in, so I thought, fuck it, go with anything. And I asked him like a pretty piss weak question and put, yeah, congratulations on your half-four victory. Aiden called me a gimp. But Tom Campbell, one person who I will not accept criticism of in this instance, is yourself. As when you spoke to Triple H, you couldn't get a word out because you'd spent the whole night cheering a fake sport. So we're equals.
Yeah, all right, it's money for both dances. It's a fair point, and it's very well made. That was a good time. Oh, no, all jokes aside, because we recorded a bank of Classic Raw review episodes, this is the first time that Jackie Orlando have got together post All In in the real timeline. So all jokes aside, genuinely, fair fucks. You had a great weekend, Clive Fucks. Like everything that I saw, you had your debut on the news videos. You were all over it on the blog. You interviewed good people at Progress. You came so close to Davey Boy Smith's son that I genuinely feared for you. And us as a whole. You had a lovely sit-down chat with Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez. Mate, you smashed it. Well done.
It was a good weekend because I sent you the picture of Jack and Davey Boy and you said, did you get a picture? And I was like, fuck no, he'd know. He'd just know.
I think my first instance, so if you haven't seen it yet, so obviously Jackie Orlando was part of the All In Wembley team. And Jack the Jobber had a chat with Davey Boy Smith Jr. You can hear that on the podcast feed right now, and you can see a clip of it on the YouTube channel. But obviously, in the echo chamber that is the Classic Raw review, I got my phone flashed on the Saturday, and it was a photo that you'd sent of, as you say, Jack the Jobber next to Davey Boy Smith Jr. And whilst I did ask if you got a photo, I do believe the first message I sent back was shit, run.
Oh, I wanted to run.
I have to say, knowing you the way I know you, your cheeks must have been fucking crimson.
I was just there, just like, don't make eye contact. Just pretend you're part of the crew. Hold cables. Pretend to be directing traffic. Whatever. Don't stare in the eyes of this man who could batter you and whose dad, who is a national and international treasure, you spent the past 2 years taking the piss off for his poor business acumen.
I kind of feel like, and I don't know, I might be speaking bollocks. I kind of feel like, had I been there with you and maybe they said, oh, Tom, can you chat to Harry Smith? I don't know. Part of me thinks I'd have just gone, fuck it. If we're going down, we're going down in a blaze of glory. I'm going to lean into it.
That's because you're an agent of chaos, that's why.
That is because I'm an agent of chaos, to be fair. I was too busy back here anyway, booking the matches for AEW.
Yeah, fuck me. Grado and Jeff Jarrett. When it happened, when I was in there, I sat there and was like, by gum, he's only gone and bloody done it.
And it was, it was unbelievable. Sat here as Grado came out and had his moment with Jeff Jarrett. And then to follow that on a couple of days later, there's Jeff Jarrett on My World going, gotta hand it to Tom Campbell. I'm like, what multiverse are we in today? This is silly.
It was a weekend that made me realize that wrestling is tiny. For a gang of gobshites based in the Northeast to basically not be at the epicenter, but orbiting the epicenter of the biggest wrestling show of all time. I was like, wrestling is really small.
Or we are incredibly powerful.
Well, there is that, of course.
I understand that you got Clive Fuck shouted at you quite a bit.
Yeah, a few people came up and said, hello, Clive Fuck. And I was like, this is weird. in a beautiful way, obviously, because we were Jack the Jobber, and Jack was getting, not mobbed, but at one point we were trying to get food and people were stopping him. And I just took the piss and put my finger in my ear and was like, we need to move the president now, lads. We need to move the president now. But yeah, a few people coming up to me, and I can't remember who it was. Someone DM'd me saying, oh, I just saw you walking past, but you were eating noodles and I didn't want to interrupt you. And I was like, it would have been fine. And someone else messaged Jack and I saying, oh, you were outside the hotel, but you were on your phone, so I didn't want to interrupt you. But everyone that we spoke to was an absolute sweetheart. And your plan kind of half worked as well, because Sean watched, I can't remember if it was the vlog or if it was the Dave Meltzer interview, and she watched it on YouTube and she went, I'm going to look at the comments. And I went, I'm not looking at them. You look at them, whatever. And she was telling me the nice ones. And one of them just says, Jackie Orlando, bring back my son. And I was like, oh, for fuck's sake.
That was an instruction that I gave ahead of Wembley.
Yeah.
Just for people to shout, Jackie Orlando, bring back my son.
So, yeah. And it was one last bit before we actually get into the ins and outs of it.
We're in no rush.
An eggless weekend.
I know.
It was...
You were ready to go to, and I think I said this to Maff, I think that you kept talking in the office about wanting to go to Egg Slut in London, which I thought, like, knowing the amount of bullshit that you and I speak, that sounds like somewhere we've made up.
Mm.
So when they kept saying egg slut, I assumed it was an egg-flavoured restaurant called something else. But no, it's actually called Egg Slut.
Actually, Egg Slut. So on the Saturday morning? Yeah, the Saturday morning, we got news out of the way. And obviously, news is going to take a while to edit. And I'm a guy who I always need some time by myself, just like wandering around. I just went, right, lads, if we've got a spare hour, I'm fucking off to Shoreditch. I want to get a record. I want to get some bits from Uniqlo because I'm predictable like that. And while I was there, I thought, ooh, Egg Slut's here. I'll walk to Egg Slut. get there, the road's fucking cordoned off and there's tons of police. And I was like, oh, they knew it was coming. I didn't find out what had happened, but it looked quite serious. I even did a lap to see if there was like another way into the road. No, completely taped off.
I'm gonna have to check. Have you done a Google News search for
I haven't, no, no.
I'm gonna say egg slut murders.
In, yeah, Shoreditch way.
Shoreditch egg slut murders.
So I went and got a bagel instead and then made my way back and I was like, I've had no eggs, but I've had a nice bagel, so that's all right.
No. Okay, sadly, no news regarding the series of murders or the raid at egg sluts.
You say sadly, surely no news is good news.
There
sadly,
is that,
people haven't be been confirmed dead. But yeah, it was.
They put them in egg bagels, like some sort of weird version of Sweeney Todd.
Oh, that'd be great! But it was a really good weekend. I got back on the Monday, and Sian was at work. And when she came back, I just had my hoodie on, sat on the couch, and I couldn't talk. She was like, "Ah, you're all right," and I was like, "Hello." She's like, "You okay?" I was like, "Oh, I'm just taking a minute." I was like, "I'll just be a minute." Ooh, I just sat there quietly for a bit and then like kind of snapped out of it and I was all right.
Was your social battery completely flat?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
We get that. Even Alex and I just go, social. We had a wedding this past weekend and we both got back on Sunday night and we're like, do you want to go for a drink? And she went, no, social battery's done now. I was like, I'm with you. So the social battery thing is real.
Yeah,
and I can imagine yours, how you not being used to doing that sort of thing for Cultaholic. I can imagine it was a shock to the system, but I hope we get to see you do it again because you fucking good.
Thank you.
And true, and nothing. And I know you don't look at the comments, but I can reassure you, as Sian can, there's all love in the room for Jackie Orlando.
Well, I had to break my Twitter posting ban as well because. You'd posted, you know, the titans of the industry, myself, Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, and there's some nice comments, so I replied to them, but yeah, I'm trying not to post on Twitter. I'm seeing stuff and I'm just like, right, I'll next time I have to pop on, I'll respond, but I'm trying to be more of a wrestling
wrestling
seer.
Observer.
Yeah.
Like a newsletter.
And I met Dave Meltzer's wife as well. And I thought afterwards, oh, I should have ripped him about his dirty ass office. So she'd have been like, yeah, too right. But
oh,
no,
that'd have been gold. Hey, that's for next time. Now you've established a rapport.
Yeah.
That's for next time. You can dig into the office. One of the comments on the video, and I don't know whether you saw it, whether Sian read it to you, described your chat with Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, which you can watch on the YouTube channel right now at Cultaholic, as the best pure interview Cultaholic's ever done.
Oh, I'll take that. That's very generous. Thank you.
In the same way that I think Billy Gunn is the best pure athlete in the World Wrestling Federation. Take it that way if you wish.
I will take it that way.
May I give a slightly more boring update before we get into the rigors of this week's show?
Please do.
Okay. Remember last time we spoke, I had my tooth was broken.
Yes.
Yeah. It's fine now. Not because I went to the dentist. I think it was maybe the day after we recorded that watch along for Buried Alive that I woke up and went, oh, I feel like it's slotted back into place. I can't seem to feel it. Oh, wait, no. It appears that in the night, the chunk of tooth that was loose has come completely off the gum and I've swallowed it.
Good.
So that's sorted now. Problem solved.
Did you panhandle your poo like an old prospector to try and find it?
I did consider that, and I'm sorry to report you're not the first person to suggest I should, quote, panhandle my poo to retrieve my tooth.
We're both in the wars. I've had pins and needles again in my entire left side for about a week. And I went to the doctors yesterday and they were like, is it hurt? I was like, no, but it's a bit concerned. They're like, all right, we'll book you in for a neck scan. And straight away in my head, I was like, cool. I'm like, perk angle. I'm going into my perk angle here now.
So are you still pins and needling?
Just pins and needles. No pain, but it's just completely tingly. I'm Ooh. So washed out on this as well. I'm like Uncle Fester, but yeah.
I wonder what that is then. Let's speculate on illnesses. That always ends well, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think I've just trapped a nerve, but I had this the other year where I had it in both arms and I thought, if this is going to be a kind of recurring thing, I want to get it nipped in the bud.
Yeah, yeah. And so they're going to look at your neck, so maybe it could start in your neck.
Yeah, hopefully.
Perk
get a pneumatic neck put on. So.
A pneumatic neck.
That's probably not doing me any favours, like, but...
I'm excited to call you the Bionic Scouser at some point.
Ooh, that would be beautiful.
A Bionic Scouser, Jackie Orlando. Right, Bionic Scouser. Pre-bionic, pre-bubonic. One from the mailbag this week, classic@cultaholic.com, if you'd like to say hi. Hello, lads. This comes from John Eiley.
Yay. Hello, John.
Hello, John. On Raw Review 180, you asked the question about why drop kicks hurt more when missed.
Yes.
And that we did. I've heard somewhere that the reason is when the dropkick connects, it gives the kicker a chance to control their landing, adjust their fall, and be able to land safely. However, if the kicker has nothing to connect with and just hits air, they lose balance and trajectory and therefore can't control their landing. So when they hit the mat, it hurts them more. Loving the podcasts as always. Thank you, John.
Thank you, John, the keeper of kayfabe.
I mean, he is the keeper of kayfabe now. He keeps it in a big castle. With a moat. So, I mean, there is kayfabe-scented logic to that.
Yeah.
Like, it would suggest that, you know, that by landing your feet onto the person, it gives you time to recover. I'll buy it.
Yeah, I'll accept that. That's fine.
10 on 10. Classic@cultaholic.com if you'd like to say hi. We're going back to... I haven't written the date on my notes, but is it the 21st or 22nd of October?
21st.
21st of October. Number one movie in the UK is The Nutty Professor still.
Mm-hmm.
In the US, number one movie is Sleepers. Do you remember Sleepers?
I know the name. Is it Robert Redford? No.
It is. Kevin Bacon, Brad Pitt, Robert De Niro, Dustin Hoffman, Minnie Driver, Jeffrey Widger, and Billy Crudup.
Billy Crudup. Yeah.
The title of the movie is slang for juvenile delinquents who serve sentences longer than 9 months. And it's the movie which sees a prank go disastrously wrong and a group of boys sent to a detention center in which they are brutalized. 13 years later, an unexpected random encounter with a former guard gives them a chance for revenge. No more spoilers. You can watch the film yourself.
It sounds like a more palatable version of Scum, basically.
It kind of does, doesn't it? The Macarena, still number one in the fucking US, still going. Number one in the UK, though, Boyzone, with their cover of the Bee Gees song, Words.
Oh, it's only words.
Words are all I have.
That was a perfect Ronan Keaton, I think you'll find.
It's like he was in the room. Pierce Brosnan, crossed with Kermit the Frog, Ronan Keaton. God love him. British magazine Music Week rated Boyzone's version of Words 3 out of 5. Just when everyone has readied themselves for Boyzone's ascent to mega stardom, they go and release their worst single to date. It will still be a massive hit, but this cover of the Bee Gees song is terribly uninspired.
The Louis Walsh helmed Irish boy bands of the 90s. He was just obsessed with a ballad, wasn't he? Loved it.
Loves a ballad. Bloody loves a ballad, that boy does. And this ballad did do very well, as it's number one on the charts. But it wasn't critically acclaimed.
No.
Oh, well, they made all the money. It doesn't matter. The day before, Fox broadcast its first ever World Series, which was won by the Yankees for the 23rd time. They beat the Atlanta Braves in only 6 games. So there you go. The Fox are showing the World Series. And congratulations to America, who once again wins the World Series. I think every year they win, America.
Fantastic. And I'm a man who likes baseball, but even the idea of it being called the World Series does piss me off.
I'm pissed off by the idea of it being called baseball. It's clearly rounders.
Two hands, rounders is one.
Well, in that case, rounders is better.
Yeah, yeah.
More skill in rounders.
Tougher wrist in rounders.
America! Come on!
Less steroids in rounders.
Not many. Hardly any steroids in rounders. Depends who you're playing against. Mickey Bully Beef, king of the rounders.
Mickey Bully Beef. Hang on.
As we're talking, Jackie Orlando is reaching. As if he is helping somebody across the Nile.
I was changing the lighting because I looked really ill and it was starting to bother me.
You look lovely.
Oh, I do now.
Oh, you do now, I suppose.
Yeah.
So that's all that's happening in the boring real world in October of 1996. But here is Jackie Orlando, Clive Fuck his way through the Wrestling Observer for this week.
So this edition of the Wrestling Observer, dated October 28th, 1996, Dave Meltzer gave me his personal copy when we were hanging out. I was like, Dave, have you got that with you? And he wheeled in his giant filing cabinet full of shite. And I was like, here you go. I was like, nice one.
I felt like Dave Meltzer would have like a sac magique that's like the same size but has everything in it.
Imagine what you'd keep in that. There'd probably be like some wrestlers we'd forgotten about, like Blitzkrieg in there or something like that.
That's where Blitzkrieg's been.
He's been stuck in Dave Meltzer's magic bag of shit.
Dave Meltzer's magic bag of shite.
What's in there? Who knows? Just take the trip and delve inside this sack like a tip. So it's a weird edition of the Observer because there's not that many stories, but the main story, which is also the story that underpins today's episode of Raw, is a chunky one. Because Bret Hart has, spoilers for the episode coming, he's agreed a new contract with the World Wrestling Federation. And apparently, it was a 20-year deal. I think we'll find out in hindsight. Was it always 20-year or was it 10-year? I remember it being a long one anyway. And then Vince McMahon obviously regrets this at some point. But as Dave's put here, Hart, I've tried to go through it and get rid of some of the Meltzer ease and just leave the prime bits. But there might be like a moment or two where I've just got to scan ahead saying, no, there's still some absolute jazz scat in here.
I bet you didn't even call him up on his jazz writing when you saw him.
No, I didn't.
Coward!
We only had 20 minutes and it was early and they both looked very tired, but switched it on as soon as they sat down. Dave Meltzer was very Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez was just, he's got a good voice, Brian Alvarez, and hearing it in the flesh was like, oh, that is good, Brian, that is good. So as my close personal friend, as Meltzer's put here, Hart was the subject of the biggest bin war in the history of pro wrestling. He turned down an offer from WCW, and as we'll hear later in Raw, he'll acknowledge it and praise WCW for the way they handled negotiations. WWF had asked him over the weekend to dramatically rip up his WCW contract on air in retaliation for Medusa throwing the women's title in the bin. But Bret was like, I'm not doing that. I'm Bret Hart, I'm a sportsman, I'm a jam-up guy, I'm friends of El Dandy, all that stuff. So at the time of publishing here, the terms of Hart's new contract with WWF weren't known for certain, but it was believed the deal amounts to slightly less than $3 million a year guaranteed over the first 3 years, and a lesser amount for the remaining 17 years. So Bret's basically thinking, I've got 3 years left of me run, and then after that, either a backstage role or an on-screen authority role, whatever. So, yeah, he'll say later, I'll be with the WWF for life. It's believed the total figure amounts to somewhere between $11 million and $14 million over the length of the contract. Hart has made it clear he didn't want to wrestle past his prime, as most of the major superstars in wrestling end up doing, particularly since he's been outspoken about Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair. Hart is also well known for being, well, the opposite of extravagant when it comes to lifestyle, so he should be easily set for life. And in some ways, it's an amazing story for someone who, not all that many years ago during the drug era, seemed destined to be a very talented mid-card performer. So, as we've gone over in previous episodes, they've been back and forth, and Bret was like, I might want to do some acting, despite I'm not very good or charismatic. Or he was like, I might go with WCW because it's an easier life, but I'd have to be with some people I don't like. So he had largely decided, after apparently changing his mind twice in the week, to go to the WWF after a meeting with Vince McMahon on October 10th. Vince flew out to Calgary, made the deal, but apparently nothing was decided until the Sunday night. Bret had told friends he was going back to the WWF after the meeting with Vince, but had his own list of stipulations he wanted McMahon to agree to that McMahon hadn't gotten back to him about as of October 15th. And when Vince wasn't getting back, Bret was like, perhaps I better go to WCW after all. But Vince got in touch on the 16th, agreed to what Brett wanted, and appeared once again in the WWF camp. But he was going to let Eric Bischoff pitch him one last time that evening. So he's like, right, everything's sorted with WWF. I'm just going to listen to this just in case. So the pitches ended up continuing back and forth until Sunday night, which, as we know, was a fucking pay-per-view night, so Vince must have been tearing his hair out. Bret Hart was in San Jose over the weekend for a Neil Young benefit show.
Of course he was.
And as late as after Buried Alive, he was still entertaining offers, not only from Bischoff and McMahon, but was also called by Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, with the Outsiders apparently attempting him to convince him to join WCW. They told him they loved working there, the travel schedule is easy on their family life, you know, hitting the buttons that you'd want to hit to get Bret Hart in. So Bischoff faxed his last WCW contract offer to San Jose and was somewhat confident as late as Saturday night that he was still going to pull the deal out, even after the WWF had plugged Hart's appearance on Raw. So those close to the situation seemed to doubt that if Hart had actually taken the Bischoff offer, that he'd agree to be on Raw. WWF must have taken it that way, because on the previous week's Raw, so on the... again, I'm trying not to get lost in the Meltzeries, but in the go-home show before Buried Alive, there was no mention of Hart appearing live. Whereas in the weeks leading up to it, like, Bret Hart's going to be on Raw, Bret Hart's going to be on Raw. Then one week they're just like, not saying anything. And then they were like, ah, Bret Hart's going to be on Raw. So, sources close to Bischoff said that Bischoff had nothing but good things to say about how Hart handled himself in the negotiations. I felt it was very classy how he handled it on television. The thing with the WCW deal, they were saying it was guaranteed $2.8 million per year over 3 years, broken down initially to $800,000 a year, maximum of 180 total dates as a pro wrestler, and two movie deals per year at a minimum $1 million per movie with Turner, Time Warner Corporation. So as we know with WCW, Hall and Nash have favored nations. So apart from Hogan, if anyone gets paid more than them, they have it in their clause that they get bumped up. So WCW, to try and circumnavigate this, would have tried to run his contract this way through Turner Movies. So therefore, as a wrestler, he's not getting paid more than Hall and Nash. So therefore, they don't have to shell out an extra $5 million a year for the Outsiders. So they've been clever.
Oh, that's an interesting little tactic. So no, he's not on a wrestler's contract. He is a movie star.
Yeah, because doing research for some other things, reading into WCW's finances, it's when you're trying to find out about the losses and the profits they made, it's weird because they filtered it through different revenue streams to make certain elements of Time Warner look good and other bits to kind of, you know, hide the negatives and that. But it's this kind of financial gymnastics is prevalent in WCW. So there is some speculation that Shawn Michaels got a similar type of clause in his WWF deal. So which is why Hart's structure of his contract may also not call for a huge guarantee for wrestling, and a lot of the guarantee may be figured in other ways. On Sunday night, Hall agreed to waive that contractual clause as a way for Bischoff to increase the offer to Hart. So Hall's basically gone, don't worry, I won't like demand more money if you need to bring in Bret Hart. If you bring in Bret Hart, we've won, basically. So tried to get through the chunk there, but that's what has been going on with Bret Hart. In slightly other news, there's another interesting key to this story, according to Meltzer. One of the things that Hart had complained about in the past that could stand in his way of going to WCW was Hulk Hogan, because he's still fuming with Hogan for being a dick at WrestleMania 9. We know that wrestling is real to Hart, but at the same time, Hogan treated him like a twat, and you would be angry about that. So apparently in the final negotiations, McMahon talked to Hart about potentially both Hogan and Savage coming back to WWF when their WCW contracts expire in late 96. Vince suggested it was possible, or even suggested more than possible, that one or both of them could come back. But apparently Bret was like, yeah, fine, whatever, I don't care, you know, I'm Bret Hart, whatever. There is no question as things stand right now that there is a lot of concern in WCW camp about Hogan and Savage leaving together and taking their unresolved top angle with them, and maybe taking a couple of their friends, brackets Elizabeth and the Giant, to WWF. McMahon's willingness to guarantee money, and in particular guarantee the amount it took to get Hart, has to whet the appetite for both Hogan and Savage as far as being top names without a contract and the recipients of a bidding war. So That's the chunky story out the way. We got there. Don't worry, friends. We got there. So
I mean, it's an exciting couple of days if you're Bret Hart. Like, right to the wire this went. So the idea that there would have been an issue. Imagine if he'd signed with WCW. There's no way Vince would have let him on Raw for this episode.
No.
You'd have gone, get out, you're done. Oh, no. No way would he give him that chance to say goodbye.
Definitely not.
That'd be daft. Which is probably why it does actually explain, when we get into it, it does explain some of Vince's reactions to the Bret spiel later, which we will touch on later. But it does explain a lot. A rare moment of solidarity with Scott Hall going, I won't ask for more money like I agreed. If you need to spend more money to get Bret Hart in.
Yeah.
I noticed it was Hall that said that, not Nash or Hogan.
Yeah, definitely not.
That's worth observing. That it was him that said it and not those two. Bret being signed to Turner. Was this not what happened with Nash and Hall in the end?
Potentially. I know there was, like I said, there was a lot of this kind of financial gymnastics at play in WCW throughout its tenure, basically. So if, like, Bischoff, and say what you want about Bischoff and trust his opinion how you like, he would say sometimes that WCW, when it was crap, was actually doing better than was what was reported, but their positive gains were filtered through the sports division or through something else to make their bottom line look better and increase advertising output. You know, that kind of stuff. It was like, we'll take it from there. They're still fine, but we'll put it over here so this looks better so we can bring in more. So it wouldn't surprise me. I know Goldberg, I think, will get one of those kind of deals in a few years for an astronomical amount of money, and they'll probably just be like, yeah, Time Warner, put it through there. And I know at the end, I think a lot of the WCW contracts will go through there, because my clairvoyant powers are saying there's going to be some kind of invasion, but apart from DDP and Booker T, no fucker of note comes in for 2 years.
Your clairvoyant powers are correct. And I think, and which is why I think maybe this is probably where that starts to happen, where they use that thing more and more. But yeah, what a time for Bret Hart. What a time to be Bret Hart and make as much money from the highest bidder. And I'm sure he'll find his own fun way to celebrate on Raw tonight. So was that the main story from The Observer this week?
That was the main story. And we've got like four tiny little bits and then we can get into it. So, more WWF news. Achim Albrecht is in camp already and he hates taking bumps, so they have put a mattress in the ring for him to learn the moves on. So that's Brackus going, don't like these bumps, they hurt. So looking forward to seeing him.
He does not look like the sort of guy who's going to take many bumps in Vince's company.
No, because he's the size of a mule. He's huge.
Brackus. Wow. He is like a Gary Strider-esque figure as a wrestler.
But German? I want to say he's German.
He is
maybe
German.
Austrian. Yeah.
German / Austrian. He's like Gunther, but if you take all the good stuff away.
Yes, pretty much.
I think
go for it.
We watched Little Mermaid the other night, so I believe like if Ursula had put a spell on Gunther in order for him to go to land, he would end up like Brackus. Taking away all his special skills.
Did you watch the live action or the cartoon?
The live action one.
How is it? Because I've only liked one of the live-action Disneys, and that was Jungle Book.
I thought, the Jungle Book one's really good. I thought the live-action one was lovely. I thought there was some nice new songs in there. I thought the parts were played really well. I feel like people shat on it for a lot unnecessarily. I think the big issue that we found was that some of the bigger characters from the cartoon didn't really resonate in the same way because it was live action. We're talking about Sebastian and Flounder. Because they were very lifelike creatures, so you didn't have like the big persona that you could give them. You're very limited in how you'd animate a crab's face without it not looking like a crab anymore.
Yeah.
Which was the bit that I think we couldn't subscribe to. But I thought it was still a very enjoyable film. I thought it told a nice story. I thought Hal Berry, who played Ariel, was wonderful.
Yeah.
Perfectly played. I thought Melissa McCarthy as Ursula was a wonderful casting.
That was the only bit of casting I had issue with, was Melissa McCarthy. Not anything about Melissa McCarthy. It's just the fact that the original Ursula is based on Divine and it's meant to be a drag queen. So I thought, in this age, obviously, it's more of a hot topic now for some stupid fucking reason. But for me, Ursula should always be a drag artist.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. Maybe it should have been. But I thought Melissa did all right with it. Mm. I thought she did. There's a lovely cameo in there where there's a market stall scene and somebody... what was it that happened? Somebody gives Ariel a fork, I think, in the market. And the person working the market stall is the woman that voiced the original Ariel.
Oh, very nice.
That's a nice little nod, a little tip of the hat to what came before, which I thought was very, very nice. I enjoyed it immensely. We watched that and then we got caught up on our only murders in the building. So it was a good night of the night.
Well, talking of things going on under the sea, Jake Roberts was supposed to appear at a Take Back Our Streets campaign in October 16th in Melbourne, Florida.
But he was under the sea.
He was under the sea. This, I don't know if this was real or an amazing excuse, but if it is real, then I feel bad for laughing at it. But if it's an excuse, this is amazing. So Jake the Snake was meant to be at this campaign in Florida. He wasn't there. And they announced he had flown back home because one of his kids had been stung by a bee and it got infected.
Oh, I shouldn't laugh.
I shouldn't laugh, but it doesn't sound real.
Sorry, I gotta go. Stung by a bee. What's Jim Brunzel doing in my house?
Stop jumping. New cushions then.
From the people that brought you, my horse is sick.
So, Terry, how's your horse? Two little bits of WCW news. One of them isn't news, but it's made me giggle with hindsight. So, in this week, in October 1996, TNT just started airing a new commercial with Sting as the star of WCW, which pretty much says he'll end up as the WCW focal top babyface. In Dave's words, after all these years of trying to push him in that position, with it never working, you'd think it might be time to give someone else a shot. This is just before we go into 1997 with Sting as the biggest babyface in all of wrestling in the hottest angle of all time.
Plans change.
Hindsight is a funny thing. Yeah.
Plans change, yeah. Dave. Plans change.
Yeah.
Admittedly, I kind of see where he was coming from with that, because obviously he was seen with Sting and Luger in 96, and whilst he's seen as like a WCW stalwart, they haven't really pitched him up against Hogan yet.
No.
And he's just sort of in there with Nash and Hall and on the receiving end of a shoe-in more often than not. So I kind of get where Dave's coming from with that one.
Yeah, I like the fact that he's been... Again, like we're saying, with hindsight, but these early weeks of imposter Sting and Sting getting pushed out, and he's like, oh, don't know if this is going to work. And it's like, well, history will prove that you're very wrong here, Dave. This is going to work like absolute gangbusters, but we weren't to know at the time. Something we did know at the time is that the leprechaun gimmick was shite, and Buddy Lee Parker has dropped it and is now Jack Boot. Believe it or not, some group complained about WCW's gimmick being a negative portrayal of Leprechaun, so they dropped the gimmick. Really. That's according to Dave.
I can believe it. I can believe it. And now he's Jack Boot.
Which, when I hear the term Jack Boot, I think of the SS. I don't know about you.
So. My first thought, honestly, was, oh, it rhymes with jackfruit.
Yeah, you can tell that I speak too much to Aidan Gibbons when I'm just like straight to World War II.
We did a whole bit on the main podcast on Friday about the Blitz. I mean, Ross said the words Blitz Spirit with AEW.
I saw it on Instagram and I was like, oh my God. Our little wrestling federation has become canon.
Horrifying, the power that we have, sir. Horrifying.
But the horror is over because that's all the news.
Oh, the horror is just beginning. Let's go into Monday Night Raw for October 21st, 1996. We start with a video package of Bret Hart leaving the WWF in early 96. The way that it's painted in this video package is that Bret Hart loses his match at WrestleMania 12, walks to the back, puts a hat on, and gets in his car and drives off. Like, still in his tights, but puts a hat on.
They're like, Brett, you booked for tomorrow. And he's like, I don't care.
Don't care, bye.
Where are you going, Brett? I don't know. The hotel, the hotel's that way. I don't care.
That's a field, Brett.
Just driving through a cornfield.
Can't believe I lost much. What's that all about?
Bret Hart is returning to Raw tonight, and he will set the record straight on his future. This video package merges into one, hyping up the return of the most perfect intercontinental champion of all time, Mr. Perfect. He's facing Hunter Hurst Helmsley later this evening in our main event. Surely you can't be the most perfect. You're either perfect or you're not.
Yeah.
It's like unique.
Yeah, exactly.
Just putting that out there, Jerry Lawler.
Yeah, he can be the most good champion, but you can't be the most perfect.
He is the most good intercontinental champion of all time.
It's good that my lexicon is so advanced, you know, being a writer and everything.
You did very well there, mate.
So good.
There's yes. the XWF DVD that I've watched where they have a little profile of Mr. Perfect. They go, he's formerly known as Mr. Perfect. Kurt Hennig is exactly what he says he is. He is awesome. It's not what he says, mate.
Mike Awesome trading in the background. He's like, oh, fuck. I've got to become Mike Perfect now.
I can't live up to that. At least with Awesome, there was some wiggle room.
Mike decent.
Mike quite good. My go-to promotion whenever I would play EWR was PGW, which was pretty good wrestling.
Nice.
There's no pressure in that, is there? Pretty good wrestling.
Pretty good, yeah.
It's pretty good. It's not great. It's not awful, but it's pretty good.
UK Undertaker on the card, obviously.
Obviously, yeah. He's yeah. Main event, mate. But much cheaper than the actual Undertaker. What a why. Pyro goes off, and then we see the skivvies very quickly removing the pyro. Raw in general has become so good and so annoyingly polished in the last 10 years that you very rarely see these little moments. So it's nice to see one here.
Yeah, because I've gone waxed lyrical on this podcast before about I don't like the slickness of WWE. I like it for WWE, but in terms of, like I say, wrestling in general, I like it a bit more rough around the edges because it feels dangerous.
The show is called Raw, for God's sake.
Like, yeah.
Welcome to Raw. It's like when Noah's Arcade bought Wayne's World nowadays.
Oh, God, yeah. Gelatinous Cube eats Village. I love it.
So Sid walks out once the skivvies have removed the pyro. He's in our opening match. He looks fucking sweaty and massive as always.
He is drenched. I had to rewind this because he's doing his fist bumps. And he fist bumps a kid and then shakes his head and a load of like just liquid comes off him. At first, I thought someone had cracked him in the head with a drink. So I had to rewind it. I was like, oh no, he's just really wet. He's absolutely soaking. It's a ridiculous... It's not the fact that, like, we know wrestlers will throw, you know, a bottle of water over their hair before they go out. But for some reason, when he's walked, it's not fallen off him. It's like it's just waited there like rain on top of a canopy. And just the second he's moved, it's gone whoosh. Weird, man.
It's such unique... Yeah, like you say, it's just such unique rain droplets on yeah. Sid. Like, he controls a weird gravity that doesn't quite let them settle until he explodes them from his personage. Like, because in my head I go, how has he got that wet in that consistency? Is it just it does he just work up a sweat before he goes out? So is it sweat, which is grim? Does he stand in the shower just right off we go? Does he just get someone to hose him before he walks out?
Oh, I can imagine that. Yeah,
someone lob a bucket at him.
Yeah. One of those Owen backstage with one of his famous cheeky ribs.
He's such a funny man. But he's up ribbing backstage tonight because Owen Hart is Sid's opponent in our opening contest. Sid overpowers him from the off, and Owen considers taking a powder, but he counters a backdrop and gets a nice missile drop kick and a clothesline to send Sid out of the ring. And just as Sid's getting back to his feet, here he comes! First appearance of the night for the British Bulldog!
He fucking lightly jogging.
It's a dad run, I thought. He does a dad run.
He's just like, oh, bloody hell, what now, what now? And he comes out and he's like, right, Sid, I'm having you. Goes to punch him. Sid blocks it and twats him. And he's like, oh, nice one, Davey. Thanks for turning up.
Davey did the, I've got to get back to the car before, because I could see the meter man coming towards it, type run. Gets throttled by Sid. But then Owen sees the opportunity, using his mate as basically a cannon fodder, and chop blocks Sid in all of the chaos. And with that, we go to break. The match is continuing, but Sid has been hurt. We have an advert for the Super... Oh, go on.
I was going to say, before we go to break, he chop blocks him, and Davey gets some boots in right in front of the referee, who doesn't DQ him. And who's the referee, Tom?
Would that be Mr. E.H.?
It's E.H. It's L fucking Hebner again. Cock. But yes, we go to an ad break. I just had to get in that. I had to vent my spleen at Earl once again.
It's the advert we get for the Superstar line, which is Doc Hendricks voicing it going, Wrestling Federation Superstar line is open 24 hours a day. I was like, Jesus, Hendricks, coming out hot on this commercial for the Superstar line.
He's just in the back and he's got a pen like this and he's just waving it in front of his face.
No, if he's got a thick felt pen, he's not waving it in front of his face, I don't think. I think he's taking a good sniff of it.
Well, that's what I was saying, to get the fumes, but you're thinking he's actually just jamming it right up his nose and into his frontal cortex.
Here we go!
Don't worry, ladies and gentlemen, I've just coloured the back of my eyeballs black. <It's> like,
and now I can smell the colours. Jim Ross on the Superstar line reveals more about Bret Hart, if I remember correctly.
I got no reveals why Sid will win the belt.
Why Sid will win the belt. Apologies. I think I wrote talks about Brett, but I think I might have been half asleep as I wrote talks about Brett. But he does indeed say, why is Sid going to win the belt? And I'd like to think that he says, why does Sid win the belt? And you wait 7 minutes for Jim Ross to go, because he's massive. Thanks for calling.
He's just dead big and wet. No one can grab him.
He's so pliant. It's like trying to hold a very wet sponge.
It's like trying to catch a frog. It's like a
nobody can put a move on Sid. He's just too wet. It's just very porous.
It's a great tactic, if anything.
That's what's made him a success story. Yes. Throughout the years. Back from break, and Owen is just working over Sid's leg. He does it until Sid starts to somewhat psycho up. He's climbing to his feet as Owen's putting the boots and the punches in. He gets a choke slam, goes for a powerbomb, but here comes fucking Bulldog again. And I love Bulldog, who chooses not to hit him from behind, but bounce off the ropes first and then hit a clothesline.
He's like, you get off our Owen there.
But then Sid just watches him run towards him.
Yeah, he's like, come on then. Shit house, let's see what you can do. The chokes, but before he went for the power bomb, the choke slam Sid hit on Owen, it was gorgeous. Owen made him look like $1 billion here, but... Now, Davey was like, no, wait, I still want to be champion. If Owen loses, I might not be champion anymore. No.
Can I win the main event of Survivor Series, Vince?
I want to survive.
Please.
I've heard the loser gets shot, and I don't want that to be me.
Out of a cannon like at the circus. Scared of heights and clones. It would be an awful day for me.
How do they all fit in that car? It's an affront to God.
I hope one day my son hears the way that they're talking about me in the future and has a fucking word.
I'm sure he'll have a calm temperament and be a really nice fella.
And I think he'll name me as one of his 7 best wrestlers.
It was about 15. It was
ridiculous. Oh, bless him. Maybe Bulldog Jr. would enjoy this podcast.
It was, yeah, it was good. Because, yeah, again, going back to All In Bollocks, we were just trying to get the Vox Pops. We're hoping to get talking to more wrestlers, but there was literally a thunder and lightning storm when we set up outside, which put the kibosh on that. So we quickly got Davey. And we just asked everyone, favorite wrestler? And they'd go, ooh, blah, blah, blah. And Davey's like, I can't really say. He was like, he was just naming everyone. He was like, Misawa, Kobashi, Brett, Dynamite, Mida, Sean. Then, of course, you know, Eddie Guerrero. And he goes, he actually went, Chris Benoit, Chris, just from in-ring. And it just moved on quickly. And we all just kind of went, oh, he said Benoit. So,
not long after his dad either. Like,
But talking of his dad, yeah, so Davey hits Sid with a big clothesline, doesn't he?
He does indeed. And then Owen and Bulldog start putting a shoe in on Sid with Clarence Mason watching with aplomb. Shawn Michaels, in casual attire, makes the save for his mate and sends the tag champs packing. Shawn and Sid have a little bit of a confab post-match, a little bit of a conversation, but they're still mates, which is reassuring. It did give the energy that maybe they were falling out about something, but I couldn't quite make out what.
Yeah. Yes. Shawn comes in, as I've got here, dressed as a barman. He slides in the ring, trips over Earl's foot, and then just proceeds to fucking batter Davey in the corner. He hits him with about 50 shots. He's like, burying you here, mate. But yeah, they stood tall. I don't know if what it was meant to be was Sid kind of saying, I don't need your help, but it didn't really come across. But that aside, I liked it. It was a half-decent TV match. Owen made Sid look great. The DQ loss doesn't hurt anyone. If anything, Owen could have eaten a loss here, but I'm glad he didn't. And it was building the tension between Sid and Sean. So, yeah, I was a fan of this. You?
I enjoyed it. I thought Sid looks great. Sid looks powerful. I think I would have probably... See, I don't know what it is. I feel like every time I see a Sid match, I feel like people get too much offense in on him. I feel like Owen got too much in on him. I didn't want to. I don't like seeing Sid look weak.
But he is one of the tag team champions, so I'll kind of allow it.
Yeah, that's a good shout. We'll let him off on this occasion.
Yeah.
We get a recap of the Buried Alive match between The Undertaker and Mankind from last night with stills courtesy of WWF Magazine, because they couldn't be fucked to send a photographer. Just grab these horrible stills for the magazine and it won't be out of date in a month's time, I promise. Yeah, good match. Watch the pay-per-view. Watch the replay. Dear God, please watch the replay. Now, smoking.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Guns are in action. They're facing the Godwins with Pigs for the 700th time. But Jim Ross has joined commentary now, and he's complaining about the tech guy from last night's Buried Alive because his commentary mic ends up not working, so he stormed off in a big huff. And promised that Bret Hart would be on Raw tonight. And he has confirmed that, yes, Bret is here in Fort Wayne. And he will speak on Raw in a bit. And my God, will he speak and speak and speak. The pigs are squealing at ringside. Bless them. Did you see the one pig that tried to make a run for it?
Yeah.
They weren't having a good day.
No, but Phineas Godwin was very excited to be having a pig, but I think he got a bit overexcited and kind of G'd it up. And I was like, oh, poor little pig.
Yeah.
The pig. I said the same thing as you when this started, though. You said Smoking Guns versus the Godwins for the 1,000th time. I had a look on Cage Match. This is only their 4th match.
Really?
And it's only the second time in traditional tag action. They must have had singles or something, because it feels like we have this match every week.
It does feel like they have a match every week, doesn't it?
Mm.
Endless runs. It's obviously not the case. Big shout, by the way, to... did you see who the pig wrangler was at ringside?
I didn't know.
The role of pig wrangler for Raw went to Tony Chimmel.
Hey.
So Big Tony waiting one day for his big gig to announce the champions. And he's doing every other job they give him until then. One of those is taking some pigs backstage. God love Tony Chimmel. This is all four of the Guns Godwins matches, to be honest. The slight caveat here is the Guns have new jeans.
Mm.
Bart's don't fit quite well, so I was on a bit of jock's watch for this one. I think 3 or 4 times he ends up having to adjust his jeans, which is a nightmare when you're wrestling.
No, I wasn't on the jock's watch for this one.
End of this comes with Billy getting knocked off the apron by Bart, who's whipped into the ropes, and poof, there goes Billy. Bart eats a slop drop, a big old slop drop for the 3 count, and the Guns look very upset afterwards. So we're looking like we're getting a breakup of the Guns.
Well, spoiler, I looked at when I was looking on Cage Match to see how many times they'd wrestled, I saw that for this podcast, this is the last time we'll ever see the Smoking Guns as a tag team.
No way, really?
Yeah, they have one more televised match on Superstars. They continue as a team for the rest of the year on the house show circuit, but they just won't be featured again as a team.
Jeez.
Hmm?
Bloody hell, that's a shame.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. End of an ear roll.
Yeah. And I did notice at the end of it, because, like you said, it was... The crowd were quiet for this, because it does feel like we've seen this match 1,000 times, because the tag scene is wafer thin. But at the end, when Billy was fuming, he looked the spit... Well, the other way around, Colton Gunn. I could just see Colton. I was like, bloody hell. He really looks like his son there, but really his son looks like him.
I think it's more the son looks like him. There's shades of Colton. Yes, I saw that with the disappointed look as well.
Yeah.
My God, imagine if the Smoking Guns had had the entrance that the Gun lads had.
I am a big fan of the younger Guns. I think they're great. Especially in the last, 6-7 months, they've really grown into their role as just dickheads. And considering that I'm a huge fan of the original run, the New Age Outlaws, whose gimmick was, we are dickheads, I think it's really, really, I think they've got a high ceiling.
A very high ceiling. And it was nice to see a little shade of the younger Gun in Dirter in this one. I wonder how Billy will do now he is a solo wrestler. I'm sure he'll be shit and Bart Gunn will be the best one. What do you reckon?
I also think that, and I don't think they will give Billy a really crap gimmick and the Honky Tonk Man as a manager at all.
Barter Billy, it's kind of got a ring to it.
Yes, Rock-a-Bart.
Christ, Rock-a-Bart all night long. The Hall of Fame is coming into Survivor Series weekend, and we know that Pat Patterson, Jimmy Snuka, and Vincent J. McMahon will be this year's inductees. I was trying to remember without cheating if we get more, and I think we do.
I want to say that we do, only because, peeking behind the curtain, on cultaholic.com we put quizzes out a few times a week, and Aiden always sends them to me first to see how I do, because I can't remember what I had for lunch last week, but I can't remember who the 15th European champion was or something like that.
I find that funny. I'm the same when I do those quizzes. I go, how did I forget my keys this morning? But yet here I am recalling everybody that has faced Triple H on pay-per-view.
But one of them was Hall of Fame inductees, and I remember, I think it is like at least, I want to say about 5 or 6 each year for the early ones.
So there's a few more to come, which we will observe as we get closer to it. Mr. Perfect is warming up backstage. He is wearing a lovely 90s tracksuit top that looks like it's probably still on a landfill somewhere. Still trying to decompose.
Which is a shame, because I'd well wear that. It was amazing.
Oh, mate, do you know what? No lie, it did cross my mind. This was something that you'd probably wear.
Well, I'm happy now, aren't I? Now that this heat wave's over, because we're entering jacket season again. Oh, as you know, yeah. I'm a fan of a jacket and or a coat.
Bloody love a jacket. I can't wait. I said to Alex the other day, I said, I can't wait for me and you to put on big jumpers and go into town and get a nice mulled wine somewhere.
Yeah.
I get excited for that possibility.
Like, I'm looking forward to, because I am older than Aidan Gibbons, the third Kenneth Branagh Poirot film is out soon.
It is!
But I was just hoping for it to be colder, because I was saying to Sean, I was like, I want to watch that and I want to have a hot chocolate. And she was like, why don't you just wait till it comes out on streaming, maybe before Christmas? I was like, maybe.
Ooh,
maybe.
But then I quite like going to the cinema, you know, on a nice cool evening and going to see it.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to. We'll see how our schedules line up. But who knows?
I would never go to a party that featured Poirot. If Poirot was a guest, I wouldn't go.
Oh no! I'd be like, sorry, lads. Babysitter's called. The dog's doing magic tricks. See you later.
Because you know that someone's going to get hurt, and it might even be someone's you.
Yeah.
So,
and if you don't get hurt, the finger of suspicion will be upon thee.
I do not want to get a finger from Clouseau. So Perfect was in his Jackie Orlando special backstage doing his squat warm-ups when all of a sudden here's Hunter Hearst Helmsley to drive a wheelie travel case into the legs of Mr. Perfect. No! Be gutted if he can't wrestle on his return tonight because his hair is extra super noodly today.
And Perfect being Perfect, as soon as he's lying on the floor, he just went, oh, God damn it. And I was like, oh, Vince is probably tearing his hair out of that now as well.
That's another swear for him to get rid of.
It's like, oh, Kurt, you bastard.
Well, I'm so sad that Mr. Perfect seems legit hurt. What a terrible thing to do, but I'm sure it'll all work out in a very sensible way. Steve Austin, little highlight of him from Livewire, ranting and raving about being left in the green room and then talking about how about the time he went to the Heart Dungeon and beat up the entire Heart family. Just Austin being Austin.
He called someone a jabroni as well. That was enjoying.
Oh, but as we're about to find out, we know who he got that from.
The Iron Sheik.
That's correct. Because he worked with the Sultan in a minute. Right, now, Orlando, I know you're a Brett guy.
We're going to have different opinions on this. I knew this watching this.
I'm ready. Okay, let's bite down on this mystery pie. JR in the ring welcomes the best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be, Brett the Hitman Hart. Here comes Bret Hart in his jeans, his grey shirt, his sunglasses tucked into the top. Every bit just a dad at a theme park.
I've got here he's dressed like 90s Ozzy Osbourne.
And 90s Ozzy Osbourne looked like Anthea Turner. Bret Hart says he missed everybody. He then talks in a very slow cadence about a rival wrestling organization that made him a great offer and dealt with him with integrity. This gets booed and then silence. But as he's contemplating his next move, the camera goes to the locker room where everybody's gathered around the TV monitor waiting to see what Bret Hart does next. Steve Austin sat front and center because Steve Austin has spent weeks calling out Bret Hart. So he's keen to know what Bret's going to do. Brian Pillman, just next to Steve Austin, who's also been heavily involved in all of this. There's a few other characters around the sides. Savio Vega is there. Salvatore Sincere. But as the camera pans all the way to the back, right at the very front of the shot, who do we see, Jackie Orlando?
It is, and I'm not sure if this is his on-screen debut in total or just his Raw debut. It's the fucking Rock.
It's fucking Dwayne the Rock Johnson making his Monday Night Raw debut, chewing gum, stood next to Salvatore Sincere.
Sideburns, the lot.
I watched this through, and I was writing notes, and I stopped, and I was like, that's not him, surely. That's not. And then I rewound it and I went, yeah, maybe he's a little bit bigger. It can't be him. It's probably somebody else. Then I went, oh, no, he's closer. And the camera's in such a way where he looks bigger. I was like, And I just print screened the shot and sent it to you, Jackie. And I went, is that who I think it is? And you went, yes, it is. It's the fucking Rock. The Rock, yeah, just backstage, hasn't debuted on WWF television at all. He's had a few dark matches to give him a run out, but we've not seen Rocky Maivia yet. Like, this is his day. This is his WWF televised debut.
I wonder if he... I should have checked to see if he worked at these tapings then, whether in a dark match or whatever. Because as we know, starting soon, the Rocky Maivia experiment is going to begin. But when we were doing the research for this, I was actually 10 minutes ahead of you. We were watching this at the same time. So 10 minutes before you sent me that, I went, is that the fucking Rock? And then you sent me that saying, is this who I think it is? I was like, yes, Tom, it is. Wow. It is. Yes, it is. He's here.
Unbelievable.
Oh, he's bloody here.
He is bloody here. But next time we see him, presumably, we'll be at Survivor Series. Now, in terms of the Observer, I read through the Observer and their report on this taping, because I think we get two episodes of Raw taped here. But they do that thing where they do a live one, and then either side of the live one, you get part one and part two of the following week's one.
Yes.
Keep people guessing. Rock didn't feature in any of the matches.
Okay.
So presumably maybe he's back here, and they know they're going to debut him at Survivor Series. So maybe back here, getting a feel for things, maybe getting some photos taken, getting ring attire tried on, maybe having some time in the ring before the show starts. Maybe. But yeah, there we go. The Rock has made his debut. Finally, The Rock has arrived on Monday Night Raw.
And there's weird serendipity in him making his debut with Steve Austin next to him.
Yeah.
I'd say after Triple H, his greatest rival. I think Triple H is his main rival for me, but then Austin a close second. But then it's also the weirdness of seeing The Rock, you know, in basically a segment with Bret Hart and Brian Pillman, because I don't think Rock and Pillman will ever wrestle, and I know for sure you wouldn't wrestle Bret.
I think maybe there are interactions, because the Nation and the Hart Foundation in 97 will have,
of course,
some brief run-ins, but then neither of them are the main target at any point for each other, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
But very possibly they will interact in some way. Certainly Salvatore Sincere will. Sincere does wrestle on this show. He will wrestle a debutant, which we'll talk about next week.
Ooh, okay.
It's not The Rock. Okay. Oh. Back to the Bret promo. He is soul-searched and decided to stay in the WWF, and Vince genuinely looks about 10 stone lighter from this reveal.
Yeah, because before the cut to the back, it did a long close-up of Vince McMahon kind of grimacing, just like, I don't know what he's going to say here. And obviously, I was like, oh, this is kind of unfortunate, weird foreshadowing. But as we went over with the Observer article, even though he'd signed, it still wasn't... I don't think it was 100% in Vince's mind that he definitely had Bret back until he said it on TV.
Exactly. So it was... But therefore, he was relieved for that reason. Now he knows he said it. So that really should be the end of the segment. Nice, short, sweet, done the bit, Bret's back, way! But it's not. Because Bret then goes on to address losing the Iron Man match at WrestleMania. And witters on for a bit, but goes on to say there's something about Shawn Michaels that bugs him. But says that Shawn Michaels may be a lot of things, but you'll never be as tough or as smart as him. Vince McMahon on commentary, very quietly, nervously, disagrees with both statements.
Oh, yeah, because I couldn't make out what Vince said, but you could hear him chuntering, just like...
He says Shawn Michaels would definitely be as tough as me, and Vince goes, well, I wouldn't know about that, Bret. And then he says he's not as smart as me, and Vince goes, well, that might be up for debate, but I don't know, maybe he is.
I mean,
Vince is in a real fucking hard place here, and Vince should have really just shut up. But Vince is like, I need to be seen to be defending Sean, because Sean's going to be livid when he hears this.
Because you can argue that Sean was smarter in terms of he played the game and the politics better. But in terms of toughness, like, fuck, is Sean anywhere near as tough as
Sean's Brett? Had the toughest schedule any champions ever had, ever.
Yeah, but we also know that every time they'll have legitimate fights backstage, Bret Hart will whip the piss out of him.
Bret then just takes a little dig at Shawn Michaels in a very creative way, because he said he's been slagging, not slagging off, but he's been really needling Sean for the last minute or so. And then he says that he will take on the best wrestler in the WWF today at the Survivor Series. There he goes. And that is Stone Cold Steve Austin. Backstage, Pillman is delighted. Austin looks disgusted. I think Austin's suddenly gone, ah, shit, here they come. All the consequences to my actions.
Huge pop when he says he'll take on Stone Cold, though.
Yeah, big old pop.
Yeah.
Madison Square Garden, says Bret Hart. It's not a church, but it's holy ground. Long pause. And when we get to Madison Square Garden, we'll see who kicks whose ass at the Survivor Series. It's like nearly a full great section of a promo, but just wanders off mentally. There was one thing missing about WWF in the last few months, and that's me. Pop. So this has been an adventure so far, this promo. He's talked about getting a nice offer from another company, but then deciding to stay. He's made some digs at Shawn Michaels that's upset Vince. He's then made a half nice comment about Madison Square Garden being a holy ground. He's then gone, I'm brilliant, I am. And then that should have been it.
Yeah, there's another, definitely
there's
should
another
have been
great
it, yeah.
out there. Another great out. Okay, the first out was better when he went, I'm staying. Bye. That would have been great. He could have ended on Madison Square Garden's not a church, but it's holy ground. And we'll see who kicks whose ass at Survivor Series. That's a great out. No! Bret fucking done. Okay. I got to go home and spend a lot of time with my family. There's this one little boy in Canada who worshipped me, and I'm his biggest hero. The little boy, one day, he got real sick, and it took a matter of a few hours, and he became the sickest little boy in Canada. I promised this little boy, on his last legs, if he pulled out of that, if he kicked out, he'd come out of retirement. And as soon as he heard it, he started to come out of it. Anyway, he died. And that little boy was my nephew. Anyway, I'm coming back anyway, because I promised I would. I'm going to give wrestling fans somebody they can look up to. He then says, I don't pose for girly books, but I'm the best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be, and I'm back. Fucking yikes. Fuck, and that's the out at last. Fuck me. What? Bret Hart, the human equivalent of a meeting that could have been an email.
I'm going to shock you, Tom. I enjoyed this.
Oh! Fuck off! How? This was just...
I will say, the end bit talking about his nephew, he definitely should have finished before that. I think by inserting the Stone Cold bits backstage, it kept it fresher, slightly fresher than it would have been otherwise. Bret was a bit Bret, but... the bits I enjoyed of it were him just not just coming back, even though, you know, he's Bret Hart, for all the best will in the world, he's not the most charismatic man. But he did have a couple of flashes when he was, like, needling Sean, and there was a couple of bits of him basically, rather than being like, oh, he did the whole thanks to my fans kind of milquetoast babyface, but he was also saying, yeah, but I'm really fucking good. I'll batter everyone. And Stone Cold will fight. I was like, I kind of liked that edge from him. I can understand that everyone who isn't a massive Bret Hart fan would think this was shite. I can understand that. But personally, I was looking for the positives. And I think as well, using my clairvoyant powers, knowing what's to come, I think I was seeing little bits that will get branched off, and it's made me excited. But if you say that this is the worst thing you've ever heard, I'm not going to try and combat you on that, because in the terms of a wrestling promo, it wasn't great, but it's Bret and I like Bret.
Now, I will say it isn't the worst thing I've ever heard.
Yeah,
I've heard much worse. Bret Hart promos, in general, for me, I find very wittery, very rambly. And I don't think he has, for all the great things that Bret Hart has, I don't think he has that sort of gravitas that you need to land a promo. I don't think he just doesn't. He just talks like a sports person talks. He has that, you know, you're never going to get a promo out of a Declan Rice. You're never going to get a promo
Harry Kane.
Out of Harry Kane. You're never going to get a promo out of the Lionesses, but you're going to get fantastic sporting achievement. And then when there's a microphone in front of them, they'll talk very calmly and meekly about strategy. And Brett is one of those guys where I feel like they're always trying to push him to be more of a sports entertainment-y promo. So he kind of does what he is encouraged to do. But because he's not feeling it, it doesn't land in the same way that it would a Shawn Michaels one. There were great lines in there. Like, my favorite, and it's one that will get used in promos. Madison Square Garden, it's not a church, but it's holy ground. I love that line. So yeah. Good. The Shawn Michaels thing, I mean, one would think they're laying the foundation for a Shawn Brett match here. But it's delivered in such a, not convoluted, but just a very confusing, meandering manner.
Yeah.
That you don't bite on it in the same way. Like, Austin gets the big pop. Challenging Austin gets the big pop because we know what that means. And that story about his nephew,
it was unnecessary.
It felt like something that fucking David Brent from The Office would do. Yeah. You know, and it was he started to get better and then he died. It's just that lack of awareness of what you're doing and no sense of structure or form. And I'm critiquing, you might listen to this thinking I'm over critiquing this, but then we critique wrestling matches in the similar way, and promos are a big part of that whole package. And you'll probably listen to this and go, and I see where some people come from with Bret Hart, and they go, the fact that he doesn't talk like a wrestler makes him more interesting. It makes him better. But then if he's going to just not talk like a wrestler, don't give him wrestler-based diatribe to read out, because then it just sounds even worse to me. You know? Get him to say less.
Well, I've come to find with working with you that we are, our taste of wrestling are two sides of the same coin. So what you were saying there about him being like a sportsman, that's why I like Brett and that's what I like in my wrestling. So yeah, that is probably why it landed with me, but for you to say it didn't land with you, that's, like I said, it's not even perfectly valid. It's an endorsed critique of him, because like you said, some bits of this didn't land, like the stuff of his nephew didn't land, but I'm just happy to have Brett back.
But it's, and one thing I will say, yeah, it's great to have Brett back, and I think he's a good force to have there, and it's great that he's working with Steve Austin and all of this stuff, and it's, he'll just be a good force to have backstage without a doubt, and I'm sure it'll all end fine.
And don't forget, we've got some good Bret Hart Mike moments coming up.
We certainly have. When he's on and when directed in just the right way, he's fantastic. That's to look for. I have a feeling that this also caused a headache backstage, because judging by the way that the final segment goes down, I feel like this went over.
Okay.
So I'll give my theory on when we get to it. But before that, the Karate Fighters Tournament is back for another year.
Hey.
Jerry Lawler's disqualified because he cheated last year, because he put a little bit of sellotape on the guy's leg.
I can't believe the WWF are actually calling back to a storyline, and the storyline they're calling back to is Jerry Lawler cheating at fucking Karate Fighters.
It's the only story that matters. Bob Backlund, in the opening round of the Karate Fighters Tournament, will face Sonny, despite the fact he's complaining about women competing in a toy tournament. It's mixed tags all the way. Doc Hendricks taking on Sable. Sid will face Marlena, but Mr. Perfect will face Phineas Godwin. I believe that Perfect has too many women in his wife mind, so he has to face a man.
Oh, he's got thousands, yeah.
Too many. So we'll get the Karate Fighters sponsorship. Shame that you're so far away, because otherwise we could play Karate Fighters still, because I believe it's still in our cupboard.
Yeah, it should still be there.
We'll keep it there for one day next time you're here. It'd be lovely. We come to our main event of the evening on Monday Night Raw. Mr. Perfect's in-ring return against Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Hunter already in the ring, and here comes Mr. Perfect. Walking out ahead of him is Mark Mero. Sable is on Perfect's left, and Gorilla Monsoon is behind them. What a strange entourage. Anyway, as he gets into the ring, Jim Ross jumps in and asks what's going on, since Mark Mero is in his ring attire. Mr. Perfect, who has been limping all his way out here, dare I add, is injured. Gorilla Monsoon says the doctor has banned him from wrestling, but Mero has offered to wrestle Helmsley instead. Helmsley says he'll only do it if the Intercontinental title is on the line. And after a little bit of cajoling, but not much, Mero is up for it. And so after the break, we get an Intercontinental title match between Hunter Hearst Helmsley and Mark Mero. Now, the reason I believe that the heart thing went on too long is because they all come out together.
Ah, right. Okay.
I feel like if they'd had the time, you'd have had Perfect come out on his own, limping, get that full pop as the man, like a man standing alone, and then have him bring out Mark Mero.
Yeah.
To replace him.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually.
Would look cooler.
But one thing I noticed here, did you notice that Hunter Hearst Helmsley didn't have his little plait in his hair? He just had his hair loose. And he doesn't have his accent anymore.
Oh. I did not notice that.
He was just, So I was like, oh, it's all falling into place.
It's all falling into place. That is so. Yeah. So we're starting. We're nearly getting try. Try.
Tell him try.
Things that didn't quite land.
Yeah.
Place becomes try for a week.
Try.
That's a good time. It's a good day. Right. So, IC title match. It's perfect on the ringside. Outside in commentary. Staying ringside in the commentary table with Mark Mero defending against Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Mero on form against Hunter until Hunter lands a tilt-a-whirl. We get some great back and forth with these two. Mero getting a very near fall off a Mero salt, but the referee gets knocked down shortly afterwards. Helmsley goes to use a steel chair, and Mr. Perfect, so he starts fighting with Sable over the steel chair, but here comes Mr. Perfect to save the day. Rips the chair away from Helmsley and clatters Mark Mero. Whoa! Sable, doing a big cry, watches as Helmsley pins Mark Mero post-pedigree and becomes the Intercontinental Champion. He and Mr. Perfect embrace as Raw goes off the air. There is a special catchphrase, Jack Atkins, that Matthew Gregg and I use for Triple H-based bollocks on the Cultaholic Classic SmackDown review, and I've never used it on here before, but it goes a bit like this. It was a setup all along! This was the worst. I hate this. I hated this.
Did you?
I'll tell you why. Right, Triple H thinks he is the cleverest fucking dickhead on planet Earth, right? Because he loves, and I swear to God he has say creative at this point, because he loves these convoluted story setups that lead to a twist, but the twists are always shit. They're like M. Night Shyamalan, because in order to get to the twist, you have to do things that are that shouldn't happen. Okay, for example, so are you telling me, are you fucking telling me, I'll say this and I'll shut up, I promise, are you fucking telling me that Hunter Hearst Helmsley went, all right, Mr. Perfect, you want to come back, I've got a plan, right? Turn up and over a space of 2 months, just keep stealing my valets and I'll be all cross with you. Then Mark Mero can maybe get in there as well and make sure you're on his side. Then I'll challenge you to a match. And then, just before the match, I'll hit you with a suitcase, with a case. Then you tell Mark Mero to come out with you because you're mates now and you've helped him win the Intercontinental title as we planned. You come out with him, say, oh, I'm too hurt, too injured to wrestle. Obviously, we'll have to convince a doctor that you are injured, so I will really hit you with the case, right? So then you have the match. At some point, I'll make sure I accidentally knock a referee down. I'll then go and get a chair. And just as I'm about to hit him with the chair, you step in and take the chair, and then you hit him with the chair. What a plan! He won't see it coming! It's when shit!
When you put it like that, yes.
It is shit! This is the Triple H getting bitten by a rattlesnake thing all over again!
And while I agree,
shit.
In 1996, this is the first time we're seeing it.
Still shit.
I like
it. Oh, no! You've changed since going to Wembley.
Mainly because, and we all know that I think Mark Marrow is one of the most underrated wrestlers of all time. Sure. But he feels like a man out of time in 1996 WWF. I think putting the title onto Triple H, they've course corrected because that's where they wanted to be. And it was a beautiful fucking chair shot from Mr. Perfect. Let's not get that mixed up. Like you said, convoluted as balls, yes. And I am dreading when we are in our 60s and finally in 2003 Raw era where it is just the Triple H being an arsehole show every week. I'm not looking forward to that. But in 1996, I don't mind it.
Yeah, it's new. So as you said, it's not happened before. But my God, it's just... Do you remember when it was revealed that Bully Ray was the leader of Aces at Eights?
Yeah.
And they literally had to take an entire episode of TNA Impact to reveal how convoluted it fucking was.
Yeah.
Yes, I plan to wrestle this match and lose and get beaten up. Fuck off.
I'm gonna use my powers of John Riley and kayfabe it a bit more. In kayfabe, I think Perfect came back, saw something in Triple H and thought, right, need to get these women away from him. Kept taking them, and then one day went, right, dickhead, get your eyes off the women and on the prize. I can take you to the top of the Intercontinental title scene. Just follow my lead, knobhead, and we'll have to do some farting around with Tim White, but trust me.
That feels like a far less convoluted plan than the one I thought they had.
Still convoluted, but slightly less convoluted. Yeah.
Okay. Well, look, we know how this goes next week, and it confuses us even more, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. But hey, yeah. Either way, we have a new Intercontinental Champion. You're absolutely on the money. This was the course that they steered back onto. This was the path they have rejoined with Hunter Hearst Helmsley as the King of the Mid-Card and Shawn Michaels as King of the Main Event. The Click, well and truly, are in charge of WWF television. And long may
it remain. There's four titles in the WWF right now. Two are held by the Click, two are held by the Hart Foundation.
Oh... And Brett's back, so it's going to be a spicy 12 months.
Yeah.
And everyone going, don't like you, you're shit, lol.
And we're going to be sitting here going, it's going to not get better than this. It's going to stay pretty much at this level, but we know that this is going to come to an end. Can this not last long? When I came onto this podcast, just after SummerSlam 1995, I could not wait until we got to the end of 96, beginning of 97. And now we're here. I fear that it's going to go by too quickly. So
we will enjoy the journey that we are on.
Let me wallow in it.
And we will wallow until next week in 1996 for the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review. Anything you want to plug?
If you haven't watched it already, watch me talking with Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez on Cultaholic's YouTube channel and the All In vlog. A special shout out to, obviously, Jack King, but my beautiful boy Luke Osborne and Pierce Graffin, who were the MVPs of the weekend. Because heading into it, I thought Luke... like dove on it. It was like, right, this is happening. And I first thought we're going to get stretched too thinly, but he played a blinder, and the amount of stuff we got through Luke's due diligence and pre-planning, we got tons done that weekend. So yeah, shout out to Luke and Pierce especially.
Special love for the whole Cultaholic team. We're good people. We're made of good people.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a village.
And I'm the king of the village.
You are the king of the village. And you, for listening to this, is the king of our hearts. And we'll be back next week. And for the latest wrestling news throughout the week, you can check out cultaholic.com. He is at Brat Atkins on Twitter. I'm at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Rack on Holic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us. Brett's promo was shit. Don't at me. Except if you ask Brat Atkins, in which case he'll agree. Love you. Bye.
You bastard.
Thanks very much for a hard foot podcast.
Oh, you twat.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.